In 2006, a Queens man who was on his way to Pakistan was arrested in London on charges of terrorism. Since then, he's been held here in the United States, and earlier this week, his trial was scheduled to start. On today's second underreported segment, Emily Berman, counsel in the Liberty and National Security Project at the Brennan Center for Justice, explains why the trial has been postponed after all these years and what the case of Syed Fahad Hashmi will mean for other terrorism trials. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
It's a pleasure to be here.
When did Syed Fahad Hashmi first come to the United States?
He came to the United States with his family from Pakistan when he was 3 years old. He was naturalized as a U.S. citizen when he was 11 and grew up in Flushing, Queens, and graduated from college, from Brooklyn College here in the New York area.
And then he went to London to study for a master's degree?
He did. He went to London in 2004 to get his master's degree, which he did. And it was after his graduation in 2006 when he was on his way to Pakistan, where he still has family, that he was arrested.
But that's after he met Junaid Babar.
Yes. This was a man who, according to government allegations, was a house guest of Hashmi's when he was in London in 2004. And according to government allegations, had what the government refers to as military gear in his luggage while he stayed with Hashmi in his apartment. That military gear is what you and I would refer to as raincoats, ponchos, and waterproof socks that then ultimately made their way to Al-Qaeda members in Pakistan.
So we know that he was bringing them to Al-Qaeda.
Babar was, it seems to be true. And he is actually...
But we're not talking about guns or anything.
No weapons. Hashmi's actually accused of no violent acts whatsoever, nor is he accused of being a member of Al-Qaeda or having had any contact with anyone from Al-Qaeda or being involved in any terrorist plots or anything of that sort.
And do we know for sure whether Hashmi was aware of Babar's connection to Al-Qaeda when he stored the items that Babar gave him?
We don't, and it's actually one of the chilling facts of this case. When you think about when you have a house guest, how closely do you look at what's in their luggage? And we don't know what he knew or if he knew anything.
But hasn't the prosecution also said that Hashmi lent Babar a phone to call a convicted bomb maker and money for a plane ticket to Pakistan?
He did allow him to use his cell phone. And again, there's no indication as to whether he knew who he was calling or for what purpose.
Under what circumstances was Babar arrested in 2004?
He was arrested after he had traveled to Pakistan and has actually pled guilty to 5 counts of material support and is serving as a government witness in several terrorism cases, both in the U.S. and the U.K. And he's receiving credit for that cooperation. So much of the case against Hashmi will come, it's expected, from his testimony.
He led the authorities to Hashmi?
It seems clear that it was his connection with Hashmi that led the authorities to Hashmi, but most of the evidence in this case is classified, and we're not sure what it is yet.
So Hashmi went to London to get his master's and then decided to go to Pakistan. Why?
He has family there, and according to his friends and family, he was on his way to visit them.
And his arrest in 2006, wasn't it the first test of American-British cooperation on terror suspects?
It is the first terror suspect that has been extradited from Britain to the U.S. He was in custody in Britain for about a year before the extradition and has been back in the U.S. now for about 2.5 years, all of which he's done in solitary confinement under very, very harsh restrictions.
So he's been in solitary confinement for 3.5 years for storing some waterproof gear?
It's exactly right. He's been subjected to what are known as special administrative measures, which were created to prevent people who are in detention from orchestrating violent acts outside prison. So it's restrictions on his communications and contacts with other people. But of course, we know that none of the allegations against Hashmi allege violence. And so the conditions that he's being held in seem to really bear no resemblance to the allegations against him.
Now, why was he extradited to the United States if the apartment and the materials he stored were in London? And London also, and the English also, have their own terrorist laws.
It's unclear. I think in much of these circumstances, the American government sort of calls the shots and determines whether someone's going to be subjected to military detention or whether they're going to be subjected to criminal prosecution.
Is Hashmi's the only case that Babar is testifying in?
There are actually several others, both here and in the UK, where he's providing evidence.
And what has Hashmi been charged with?
He's been charged with essentially material support to al-Qaeda for having aided in providing these raincoats and socks. There's also, I believe, some allegations about financial support.
Which would be separate from the storing of this stuff?
Correct.
My guest is Emily Berman, who's counsel in the Liberty and National Security Project at the Brennan Center for Justice. We're talking about the Syed Fahad Hashmi case on the second of our underreported segments. So he has been in solitary confinement where for the last 2.5 years?
Right here in Manhattan at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in downtown Manhattan.
And he's been held under special administrative measures. Is that typical of defendants in terrorism trials?
Well, you know, it's becoming more and more common. The New York Times did a story in February of last year where they found that of the 6 people being held under these special administrative measures awaiting trial, 4 of them were terror suspects. And they really... these harsh conditions of confinement that people are placed under with these special administrative measures raise both humanitarian and legal concerns. And on the humanitarian level, it's clear from evidence that's been amassed over the years that prolonged detention and isolation can cause serious mental and emotional harm. And legally, what this means is that defendants often reach a place where it's difficult for them to participate meaningfully in their defense.
Now, why would he be kept in solitary confinement? Whether he was involved on one level or another, this still does seem to be a rather minor offense.
It really is hard to fathom why the government thinks that these measures are necessary. As I said, they were created to prevent people from orchestrating acts of violence or causing harm through their communications. And there's no indication that this is a man who's ever engaged in any violent activity.
Weren't the special administrative measures originally designed for defendants in drug cases?
That's originally how they came about, drug cases, organized crime cases, and those sorts of things. But as I said, now they seem to be imposed almost as a matter of course with anyone where there's a possible whiff of any terrorist involvement, whether that's been proved in any way or not.
Well, last year there was a motion to reconsider the SAMs, as they're called, and the Brennan Center wrote a letter to the Attorney General asking him to reconsider these restrictions. How did the Justice Department respond?
Well, they didn't. And actually, I wish it was something as formal as a motion, but in fact, the procedures through which these SAMs are imposed, it's really just a decision by the Attorney General. And so we had written a letter along with some other civil liberties organizations asking the Attorney General to reconsider some of the harshest measures at the very least, and we got no response, and those measures didn't change.
Was the Brennan Center interested in the SAMs even before the Hashmi case occurred?
We are interested in them, as the Brennan Center, as you may know, works on issues where counterterrorism policy impacts civil liberties. And this is a particular case about a New York man, but as we noted earlier, these measures are imposed on many, many terror suspects as well as convicted terrorists. And so when we think about how this government is going to treat terror suspects and convicted terrorists in the future, this is an issue that's going to recur.
Can you describe what the special administrative measures include?
Sure. He is held in solitary confinement, 23 hours a day of that is in his cell. He's prohibited from interacting with anyone within the prison other than the guards, so no contact with other inmates. No direct or indirect contact with the media is permitted. He's permitted to read some approved portions of a newspaper, but only on a 30-day delay, and he's not permitted to listen to any television or news, television or radio news programming.
Can he meet with lawyers?
He can meet with his attorney, but all of his movements and communications are monitored by the government. And he can meet with one family member for an hour and a half every other week.
Now, the time limit for Sams was extended after September 11th to 1 year. Why has Hashmi been held under Sam over 2 years?
Well, his case presents some complicated issues, and so the pretrial portion of his detention has gone on longer than an average criminal defendant's detention might.
And I've heard that this is the longest time that anyone's been held in pretrial solitary on American soil.
I don't know that for a fact, but it would not surprise me. It's quite a long time.
What kind of access has his lawyer, Sean, is it Mayer, to Hashmi? He could tell him what's going on in the news right now, couldn't he?
Well, there are also restrictions, quite severe restrictions, on what his attorney is permitted to tell him. And in fact, one of the more complicated and troubling twists of this case is that because much of the evidence against Hashmi is classified and secret, while his attorney is permitted to know about that evidence and see it, much of it he can't discuss with his client.
So Hashmi doesn't know what charges are being leveled against him?
He knows the charges, but he does not necessarily know who the witnesses are or what they will be testifying to, or the actual evidence that's going to be used against him. You might imagine it makes it hard for a lawyer to work with his client to rebut those charges.
Well, on the other hand, I would imagine that a lawyer would do everything possible to get Hashmi out of this situation where he's been in solitary confinement for at least 2.5 years. Why did the defense then ask earlier this week that the start of the trial be postponed?
My understanding is that there was a scheduling conflict with one of the defense witnesses. So nothing too nefarious going on there, just trying to work, make sure that he can put on the best defense for his client.
Have the Sams affected the defense's case other than preventing Hashmi from knowing what he's being charged with?
Well, it's unclear what impact it's had on his mental state, but as I said, there's great evidence that it can impact a defendant's ability to consult with his attorneys.
Aren't there larger civil rights issues here, civil liberties issues? The Sixth Amendment states that you have the right to confront the evidence and witnesses that are being brought against you. Will they ever have that opportunity?
Well, this case absolutely raises those issues, and in fact, it's one of the things that makes this case a bit of a window into what might be to come as the Obama administration presses forward with prosecutions of other terror suspects.
This is one of the reasons that some people would prefer to keep these trials in Guantanamo or somewhere else.
It's true. It's certainly a concern that we don't want to allow dangerous information to be leaked through the trial process. But in fact, there are procedures that have been put in place. There's a statute called the Classified Information Procedures Act, which puts rules in place about how judges and attorneys deal with cases that have classified information involved in them. And so far, the judges have been able to make those work quite effectively.
Do you think that what's decided in this case will have an effect on the trial of the al-Qaeda mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed?
I think it's entirely possible. First, it's important to note this Hashmi is not KSM. And one important difference...
Well, how long did Bahar even stay with him?
2 weeks. He was there for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do think that the way that this judge finds to deal with the issues of classified evidence and secret evidence might show the way forward for other judges dealing with those similar issues in a KSM trial, if there were to be one. He seemed quite anxious to plead guilty, so we might not see that, but of course we could.
Do we know how Babar and Hashmi even knew each other?
No.
I mean, it could have been that that he was asked by Al-Qaeda to put him up for a couple of weeks, or it could have been that a friend said, I know somebody who needs to crash at an apartment for
exactly.
a couple of weeks.
And these, keep in mind, these were university students, and I think we've all crashed at someone's house at one time or another in those years.
Will Hashmi be allowed to testify at his trial?
He will be allowed to testify should he choose to. Of course, he has the right to decline to do that. But he has that option, as all defendants do.
There'll be a status conference on January 28th. Do we know if a new trial date will be set then?
I imagine that will be one of the items on their agenda.
And is this something that the Brennan Center is going to be pursuing? Are you going to be supplying law support as well?
We tend not to get too involved in the criminal side of terrorism prosecutions, but we're certainly monitoring it as far as I said, the issues that it raises for any civil liberties going forward.
Emily Berman is counsel in the Liberty and National Security Project at the Brennan Center for Justice. She's been talking with us about the Saeed Fahad Hashmi case for Underreported Today. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.